Hi, it's Bob from Royal Spa. Soaking in a hot tub full of Epsom salts is the absolute best way to minimize everyday aches and pains. And we know all about Epsom salts at Royal Spa. Royal Spa hot tubs are the only hot tubs on the market that can safely and effectively use Epsom salts. Made right here in Indiana, Royal Spa hot tubs are the highest quality hot tubs on the market. Visit any one of our three Indianapolis locations or visit royalspa.com.
Ah, Royal Spa.
Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz Today.
So Alejandro Mayorkas gets to survive impeachment because there's no trial. The Democrats said, we're not going to bother. It's a very weird thing to say. And then Mayorkas appears in front of this Senate committee and is like, the border, it's just fine.
Why did you say the border was secure? Was that a lie? What do you mean by that?
Senator Romney, allow me to assure you that I have honored the oath of office that I have taken more than five times in my 22 plus years of federal service.
Let me go back to the question. That's as accurate as it is irrelevant, which is my question is, you said that the border was secure. What did you mean when you said the border was secure? Is that not a lie?
Senator, you've asked me now if that is a lie, and I have assured you that I have honored the oath of office that I have taken.
In what way was it not a lie then?
Senator, with the resources and authorities that we have, it is as secure as it can be.
Good Lord. Anybody else feel safe? I actually tried to look for a translation of what it is Alejandro Mayorkas, the Homeland Security Secretary, has said.
Remain calm. All is well.
I think I'm close. I think I'm pretty close there as to what he's saying. Tony Katz today. Holy McCrap. You know he's lying. Everything is like, get me out of here. No one believes him. No one should believe him. And his argument is, hey, show me the money.
Chairman Peters, Ranking Member Paul, distinguished members of this committee. Every day, the 268,000 men and women of the Department of Homeland Security carry out our mission to protect the safety and security of the American people. They protect our shores, harbors, skies, cyberspace, borders, and leaders. They stop fentanyl and other deadly drugs from entering our country. They lead the response to maritime emergencies. As we speak, they are engaged in the response to the tragic Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse in Baltimore. They help communities recover and rebuild after a natural disaster. They combat the scourges of human trafficking, forced labor, and online child sexual exploitation, and so much more. All this despite a perennially insufficient budget. The dedicated public servants of DHS deserve full support, and the American people deserve the results a fully resourced DHS can deliver. The funding opportunities outlined in the President's fiscal year 2025 budget for DHS are critical to meeting both goals. I welcome the opportunity to discuss this proposed budget and highlight some of its key proposals with you today.
The question before you, Secretary Mayorkas, is the budget keeping you from enacting the policies you have not enacted? I think that's a legitimately good question. I would argue that might be the most baseline question I've got. Are you saying that the budget issues are keeping you from doing your job? Or are you not doing the job? And then you're saying, well, if I had a bigger budget. I'm not sure which one he's going for here. I'm not sure which one he's pushing for here. What I do know is that when you listen to some of these answers that Mayorkas gives, he does not sound like a guy who's serious at all. As a matter of fact, you have Senator Rand Paul, who is the ranking member saying that you have everything you need. What do you keep saying somehow that things are insufficient?
All of the laws that existed under the Trump administration still exist under the Biden administration. You have all the powers that you need. The laws on accepting migrants to this country says the executive may admit migrants. Doesn't say the executive branch shall admit migrants. You could simply say we're full up, we've got too many criminals, and we've got the horrendous thing that happened to Lake and Riley and to others. And we're just full, and we're going to stop taking migrants for a while until we can sort out the mess we have at the border. You have every power to do that now. You just don't utilize those powers. But it isn't about really being good at utilizing the power. We just think you're not obeying the law. And I think it is a sad day. Yesterday was a sad day that we had to impeach a member of the cabinet. But today is a sad day that the majority chose not to even hear the arguments, not to see the proof one way or the other and have a real trial. So I look forward to trying to get some of the answers today. And I hope you will tell the truth. I hope you will not just simply say, I don't know. You've been asked many times about Lake and Riley's family. You should know everything about the alleged murderer. And I hope you'll explain to us how he got into this country and why that happened.
Now, Lake and Riley was the nursing student who was found dead on the campus of the University of Georgia. And absolutely, Rand Paul got into it, asking point blank about the parole system that we have. This is a guy you knew about. This is a guy who got paroled. He got allowed into the country. Can you explain how that works? It was a pretty interesting and intense back and forth.
Secretary Mayorkas, under your administration, the Biden administration, over a million people have been paroled. What is the criteria you use for paroling individuals?
Ranking Member Paul, the parole process is one that we execute according to the law. We make individualized determinations with respect to a significant public benefit or an urgent humanitarian reason.
So for what reason was the alleged killer of Lake and Riley, Jose Ibarra, paroled and allowed to come into this country?
Ranking Member Paul, first and foremost, all our hearts break for the family of Ms. Riley. Secondly, the perpetrator of this heinous criminal act needs to meet justice to the fullest extent of the law. And I will not comment on the particulars of the case because the matter is being prosecuted by authorities now.
This isn't on the case of whether or not he murdered her. This is on the case of why you paroled him. Why was he paroled?
My same answer, Ranking Member Paul.
You're refusing to answer the question?
I have provided my answer, Ranking Member Paul.
So, no answer. No answer. You won't explain the system, how it works, how these things happen, whether or not you knew he was dangerous or whether or not you learned he was dangerous. What system do you have for even determining whether somebody is dangerous? And why is it that people are coming? Well, of course, the answer is climate change.
Finally, extreme weather continues to devastate communities. Last year, FEMA responded to more than 100 disasters. Our budget provides $22.7 billion to assist community leaders and help survivors in the aftermath of major disasters, and additional funds to invest in resilient strategies that will save lives and taxpayer money in the decades to come. Essential to our success across all mission sets is our department's ability to recruit and retain a world-class workforce. In addition to the frontline border workforce I mentioned, the President's budget includes $1.5 billion to maintain our commitment to fairly compensate the TSA workforce.
Look. I'm not going to listen to the TSA workforce as something that needs more money. What we need is less TSA. That's personal. I've got my own issues. Extreme weather continues to devastate communities. FEMA responding to more than 100 disasters. $22 billion to assist community leaders. you know that this gets brought up, so they can then move into the conversation of, and oh, by the way, this is what's causing these new migratory patterns. They love this argument. Rand Paul doesn't seem to love any part of it at all.
Secretary Mayorkas, yesterday your impeachment trial ensued in the Senate. I don't see this as a happy day or a day that I take relish or pleasure in, but it's a sad day. A sad day in the sense that it's come to this. This isn't a debate over policy. This was a debate over malfeasance, a debate over whether you've been telling the truth and whether you've been enforcing the law. We have a disaster at our southern border, a disaster that becomes very personal to people. Lake and Riley's family, this disaster cost them the loss of a loved one. We have a disaster where people show up at the border every day and they just simply say, hey, I'm Joe Smith from Venezuela, and then they waltz on in. There's supposed to be rules. There are rules about paroling people. Under the Trump administration, a very small number of people were paroled. Under this administration, it's become a blanket parole. There's been the question, and you've been asked repeatedly. You testified to Senator Graham last year that parole is individualized. But then the administration has admitted that it's a public benefit to have migrants come in as migrants as opposed to illegal aliens, as if it's a difference. You know, a million people come by and we don't see them at all, and a million people come by and they stop and we give them migrant status and somehow that's better, and there's a public benefit to that. But that's not individualized. That's judging people as a group. But I can't help but be sad for Lake and Riley and her family who didn't have to have this. And he wasn't paroled for any of those reasons. And we're going to get into that in the question and answer. You've either said you don't have the knowledge, you've been asked about this multiple times, but we're going to ask again, how did the murder of Lake and Riley get into this country? And what is the statute that allowed you to do it? How could you? And how could you sleep at night, you know, having done that?
Yeah, it got rough. I have no issue with it getting rough. I have an issue with the fact that we haven't done anything about it. This brings us to the whole Speaker Johnson issue. Johnson has four pieces of legislation that he wants to get passed in the House and send up to the Senate. Actually, it's five, right? You've got the funding for Ukraine. You've got funding for Israel, funding for Taiwan. There's something else. And then there's the border. Then there is funding for the border. Now, I'm here to tell you, I don't mind them being individual bills. I actually prefer it that way. I do. I much prefer it that way than to something big and blobular. But the border can't be last. The border has to be first. And while I would not replace him as Speaker because I don't think that provides us any value, I think it is a strategic mistake. Even if he isn't engaged properly as I see it, you can replace him when you win and win a larger majority. How do you not go for border first? I have got no idea. None. And no idea why, considering you control this. You want the other things past this. Get tough. I think that's the argument of Byron Donalds, right? The argument of the representative from Florida is that he's not getting tough enough. He isn't being strong enough. You got to go out there. You got to crack a couple of skulls. You got to get down with it. You got to get into the thing, and you got to do it right away.
Honestly, Maria, I do not believe that he is. I think that this bill is essentially the Senate package just chopped up into three, so members can vote for each package, but then they're going to merge them back together and send it to the Senate. Well, that's just the Senate deal right there. There has been no consequence for the Democrat Senate or for the White House for leaving our border open, for allowing fentanyl to flow through our streets, to allow now an uprising of measles and mumps and tuberculosis, diseases that we have essentially eradicated in the United States. Those have come back.
Yes, I agree. Those diseases have come back. So this is, as a matter of strategy, I'm not quite sure where the speaker is. And as a matter of strategy, I still wouldn't replace. I think it's a bad strategy. Win, get a bigger majority, replace them then. Rational thought. I'm Tony Katz. I forget which social media place I was at, and I don't even know why I was there, because it's only meant to suck your soul right out of your body. Tony Katz today. It was an article about the 15 celebrities we forgot had talk shows. Fran Drescher had a talk show? You see, they talk about the top one is Chevy Chase, and it was a total disaster, and it was the worst thing anybody ever saw. And of course it was. It was Chevy Chase. He one season of Saturday Night Live, Fletch the vacation movies. And after that, an impossible human being to work with. He only did one season of Saturday Night Live. Yeah, he left. He did the one season, the first season, and then he was gone. That was it. He was out the door. And then, of course, he did the vacation movies, the National Lampoon movies, right? And all of those are, you know, ones that people seem to really love. And then, of course, he did Fletch. And Fletch is Fletch. But like Three Amigos. Do you remember Three Amigos for Chevy Chase? Or do you remember Three Amigos for Steve Martin and Martin Short? Because all I know is those guys have been working together for years, and whenever somebody says Chevy Chase, they go, oh, I love that city in Maryland. They nothing to do with the guy. He was on that show Community, which is brilliant TV, by the way, and they wrote him out. Because it's just impossible. Tony Danza had a talk show from 2004 to 2006. I don't recall. I don't remember. I would not have watched. Fran Drescher had a show. She had a talk show, but it was TAWK. Get it? Talk. And it ran for 3 weeks. 3 weeks. Khloe Kardashian had a show called Cocktails with Khloe, where the word cocktails was spelled with a K. Has anybody reached out to Khloe Kardashian to say condolences on the death of her father, O.J. Simpson? No? Wait a second. Are we having this conversation? Khloe Kardashian, my view, Khloe Kardashian's father, O.J., wait a second. My view. Chelsea Clinton's father, Webster Hubble. Go on. Do the search. Webster Hubble, Chelsea Clinton. I don't know, and I'm not commenting necessarily on her looks, producer Jason. I am saying, come on now. Justin Trudeau is Fidel Castro's kid. Have you never done that search? Justin Trudeau, that's Trudeau, Fidel Castro. Just take a look. Take a look, and then we can be done with the rest. Of course he is. I don't know if that makes Khloe Kardashian a good talk show host or not. I did not know. But I did forget about Chevy Chase. Speaking of the Kardashians, Kris Jenner had a talk show? According to the quote, she was uninteresting and, quote, looked not just like a deer in the headlights, but like a deer that already got hit. And I am just sorry I had not thought of that line. That line is beautiful. Beautiful!
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
I'm Tony Katz. This is Tony Katz Today. Actually recognize what it is that they have said. They engage a conversation not asking themselves, how could the conversation be used against me? In my travels, my political travels, I have most seen this from the political left, specifically politicians who engage in conversations not thinking that we don't have the record of what they said 3 hours or 3 days or 3 weeks or 3 months or 3 years before. And then when that information is shown to them, they are stunned, they are shocked, they are outraged, they are enraged. Why? Because they were told their entire lives that the press was with them. And then new media came along, we came along, social media came along, and we were able to find the record and say, wait, this isn't what you said just the other day. And it has infuriated them to no end. But yet this same methodology, the same philosophy, the same reality has not yet affected those in progressive media. Tony Katz, Tony Katz Today. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. 833-468-8669. 833-GOT-TONY. And maybe said to a better point, they don't care. Just keep the bread and circuses going. Just keep the placation of the audience going and build the audience. The thing that they claim that right-wing politicians are doing, and I don't even think that it's necessarily a false claim in some cases, they don't care about the country. They just want to build their fiefdom, right? Everybody is the Mao of their own digital fiefdom. That is my line, and that is true. Everybody is the dictator of their own digital fiefdom, and all they're trying to do is build up their clicks. The problem is when they make that accusation of, let's say, a Marjorie Taylor Greene or a Matt Gaetz, I don't necessarily disagree that they're much more interested in their brand as opposed to the party. That's my take. But it doesn't mean that the person making the accusation isn't saying the exact same thing. That they're interested in their brand and not interested in the party. One could apply it to me, but you'd have to take a look at the body of work. I apply it to Joy Reid. Joy Reid over at MSNBC is not engaged in conversations, I believe, of honesty. And I think has been proven not in honesty, but rather to the idea of ideological clickbait. I think we could say that, and people might say it of others. I'm saying it of her. What is it as of late that she has put out there that easily gets refuted? So easily that when I say it to you, you will start sending me posts on X. I won't even tell you what the response is. I'll give it a good 60 seconds. You'll have it instantaneously. Are you ready? Joy Reid on X points to an article by Jahan Jones. I think I'm pronouncing his name properly. J-A-apostrophe-H-A-N. And the article is entitled MLB's, meaning Major League Baseball, MLB's few black players left should be a warning about the war on DEI. What does the post say on X from Joy Reid from her show The Readout? The number of black American players in Major League Baseball has plummeted to just 6%, offering a warning about what can happen when institutions de-emphasize diversity. So Major League Baseball is just 6%, and this is proof that we're not doing enough for diversity. With that, I now give you 60 seconds to come up with the only response that is. what would you say to Joy Reid at this moment where she says 6% of Major League Baseball is black? This is a travesty. Where is the justice? Where is the diversity? Why is this league so full of outrageous bigots? My goodness, this is just a white supremacist league right here. All right, that's close enough. I don't need to do any more. You know the answer. The answer is, hey, Joy, do you feel the same way about the NBA? Now, for a lot of people, they're going to be like, oh, no, he didn't. Yes, of course I did. They want you to be afraid to have conversations, to have conversations about race. My answer is, and this comes from the Hebrew, I'll have any damn conversation I want. If people don't like it, change the channel or kiss off. It means nothing to me. I am not afraid of a conversation when we engage the rational mind. And the rational mind is, you're telling me that we are de-emphasizing diversity. As people pointed out on X immediately, if you're not on social media, good for you. I mean, you're right. There are on X, used to be Twitter, something called community notes. And when someone posts something so absolutely asinine as this, and the article is as Major League Baseball celebrates Jackie Robinson and his pioneering contributions to the game, I can't help but think about the fact that the league is reporting a historically low number of black American players in its ranks, only 6%. So none of that matters. The idea that they're only 6%, it's because the league is bigoted, is nonsense. You would have to get into a serious amount of data. And some of that data would involve how many black kids are taking baseball in elementary school, middle school, high school. They're doing the, what do they call it? Not the Pop Warner. The Little League. They do the Little League, right? And build up from there. Culturally, maybe baseball is not the sport. You could discuss the fact that possibly through economics, you got to buy the helmet, you got to buy the bat, you got to take the lessons. It's much easier to play other sports or get involved in other sports that have a lower cost if you're going to argue that people who are black come from a lower socioeconomic status. You could say all that. And there could be things within there that could be real conversations. None of it would involve bigotry in Major League Baseball. None of it. At all. So, and on X, they can do these community posts that refute the data given in any specific post by a person. So here's the community note. The NBA is over 70% black, meaning all other ethnicities are underrepresented. By this logic, the NBA has massively de-emphasized diversity. Isn't that exactly what it was you were thinking? You have a league that is predominantly black, and if we were really going to discuss giving people a chance to rise and a chance for equality, you would have to have, for every black person in the NBA, a white person in the NBA, and an Asian person in the NBA, and a Hispanic person in the NBA. Someone else posted, the tweet implies that Major League Baseball de-emphasized diversity, but 28% of Major League Baseball players are international born. And it's ranged between 26 and basically 30% since 2002. If you divide the 6.2% black American players by the 72% of players who are American, you get 8.6% of the Americans' players being a black. Now, someone could do that math. They're trying to make an argument that, hey, maybe the percentage isn't as low as you say, and maybe the percentage should be seen differently. And what would that percentage be as a percentage of Americans writ large? And even all of that doesn't matter. No one cares how many women lay brick. Why not? This is Jordan Peterson's best argument. Not good, not great, best. It is It was the first, when I first saw that argument, I said, okay, that's thinking. Because I actually saw a few years back, I saw his live show, the 12 rules thing. I didn't enjoy it that much because I didn't need these rules. I knew this. But definitely there were people in the crowd who didn't. The idea of how you have a quality life, a purposeful life. And so while I was like, okay, it wasn't what I was expecting. It wasn't the show for me. I can appreciate that other people appreciated it. And I was glad that Jordan Peterson was there, Dr. Peterson doing the thing. But Jordan Peterson asked the question, when you tell me that women are underrepresented in professional jobs, what about bricklayers? What about construction work, road construction? Women are massively underrepresented there. Why isn't that a problem? And usually the answer from whatever woman anchor or moderator is talking, oh, well, you need to be serious. He is serious. He's asking the absolute right question. Why is this a conversation about Major League Baseball? Let's take a look at the amount of black men going to college. How about the idea of men in college? Do you know that the percentage of men in college is massively down? Why? Because men get shunned from going to college, and women are told they have to go to college. College is there for them. They have total say. They will have control of their lives. If you type into any search engine, percentage of men going to college. Let me give you the first couple of headlines. The Brookings Institution. The male college crisis is not just in enrollment, but completion. The Atlantic. Why are so many young men giving up on college? Here's Pew Research. Why the gap between men and women finishing college is growing. Here's USA Today from 2021. College life. Decline of men on campuses hurts all of America. Why don't men go to college? Because every day men are told that they're terrible and they're toxic and they're despicable and they're disgusting and they're wrong and they're abusers. And they're rapists. And every day, there's some woman yelling, screaming, engaged in a nonsense conversation on social media that some guy looked at me in the gym while she's wearing a thong. And how dare he? No, not how dare he. He's a man. And if you're wearing a thong, I'm gonna look. Now, staring is creepy. Looking is normal. As a matter of fact, if you have sons and they're not looking, you gotta be like, oh, guys. Well, Tony, what if they're gay? I'm sorry, if the right woman is wearing a thong, the gay guy is gonna look too. You know I'm right. You know I'm right. Look in the other car next to you. They know I'm right. Again, there is no conversation that we won't have. You cannot engage dishonesty and expect to get to some kind of rational place. It's impossible. I won't do it. But we don't push men going to college. We don't push men going to college. And you know who doesn't care? Joy Reid. But not enough black people playing baseball? Massive, massive issue. Except, of course, it's not. Of course it's not. The story, the post, is to put the idea out into the sphere that we live in this racist, bigoted nation, and it's not true at all. Because you knew, without me giving you the rest of the story, immediately you went to, well, what about all the black men who play basketball in the NBA? Is that a sign of de-emphasized diversity? And once you realize the answer is no, there could be a whole host of reasons why the NBA is predominantly black. And some people would want to argue, well, it's body composition or those kinds of things. No, I don't think that's it. And I don't have the science for that. I do have a way to look at these things socioeconomically and culturally and say there's more of a desire to get into the sport for these reasons. Specifically, basketball is a low barrier to entry. It's like hockey. You do not see many black hockey players or many hockey players from, let's say, third world countries. Hockey's an expensive sport. So if white people have more money or writ large doing averages, they have more dollars to put into that sport. Or another way to look at it is, if hockey is mostly from cold weather places and you have more white populations in those cold weather places, you will therefore have less black players within those organizations that play hockey. But you can engage a pickup game literally on any street corner or in any park. That's just the way it is. I don't know why that, like, for a lot of people, they'd be like, oh my gosh, what? I think it's a pretty solid observation. And if someone has data to it, Tony at TonyKatz.com, send it to me. I'm all ears, because I could be wrong about the hockey conversation. I could be wrong about the basketball situation. I don't think I am, though. But I'll take the data. But it's not like anybody says the NBA isn't diverse enough. Which really brings us back to the whole Caitlin Clark thing. Right? People are like Jamel Hill. Why is Caitlin Clark getting all this attention? Because she's the scoring leader, the biggest scorer in women's basketball of all time. And people want to watch. Well, they want to watch because she's white. Women's basketball doesn't give a damn. You understand that, right? You think the Indiana Fever, the whole Pacers organization with Jones the Fever, or the WNBA, or all those sponsors, I mean, this idea that she's going to get like an eight-figure deal from Nike, you think they give a damn? They just want more. They want people buying the shoes, people filling the seats, people watching on TV, and the advertisers coming to town. And if they could do that, they don't care. And if the whole sport, if the whole league gets lifted up because of it, you think they care? What Jamel Hill has to say because everything about her is some contrived, bigoted nonsense? Jamel Hill, Joy Reid, at some moment, the mind meld is complete. They want you to be angry. They want you to see everything as oppressive and wrong and disgusting when that's just not the way it is. I'm Tony Katz, and this is Tony Katz Today.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Not one, but two. The Trump hush money trial, which should never be a trial to begin with, they've lost two jurors. One because she was found out. She couldn't keep her anonymity. The other one just flat out lied. The other one lied to be on the jury. Tony Katz. Tony Katz Today. Oh, this is nuts. Absolutely nuts. One juror dismissed after disclosing that he was born and raised in Italy and then compared Trump to Berlusconi, the former prime minister. Berlusconi died last June. Guy was convicted of tax fraud. This other woman said, people are discovering who she is and it's becoming a problem. So the press is way too involved in this. The press will ruin the thing that they want. They'll say Trump will be able to get a fair trial. I mean, he gets to make this argument now as clear as day. Best of luck finding that jury. Thank goodness I don't live in New York. Find everything at TonyKatz.com tomorrow, everyone. Take care.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.